Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's October 18th, 2019. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Nah, I'm bummed, dude. I'm sorry. I can't fake it. I can't fake it. I am bummed. I got to tell you. So, you know, this week, I guess because we were doing all the research on the Postel thing that's going on, and, you know, we'll talk about that in a little bit. But, you know, YouTube is a lot like Pandora and all these other things, where, and Amazon and all that. If you search for something, all of a sudden it thinks, oh, that's everything you want to look for, and it starts feeding you all this crap. And so because we had been looking at all these videos...
It's kind of like IKEA, right? You can't get out.
Yeah, it's terrible.
If you get in, you're stuck.
It's terrible. And you never get rid of them unless you literally say, hey, stop sending me this stuff or whatever. But, you know, old videos of, like very famous poker hands on TV kept coming up, or... You know, and then there was one, it was like between Phil Ivey and Chris Ferguson, and I'm just like, who do you root for in this hand? You know, and it's just been bumming me out, because I hardly watch any regular TV anymore. I basically, I'm either working on trees, or bowling, or magazine stuff, or the show, but I mean, you know, so when I do watch something, a lot of times it's just YouTube. And so I'm getting bombarded with all these videos, and I started to get nostalgic. I'm like, oh, man, I remember the good old days of not only all of these famous poker players, the ones that made us fall in love with the game, you know, but just the content was just, for me, it just felt so much more, I don't know, invigorating, and it just, it reminded me of a simpler time.
Yeah, know? More innocent, right?
Yeah, and then it's like, these are the people, you know, these are the people... That a lot of them are the ones that are bringing me down now. They're bumming me out. And it's just tough.
I think it's the interesting thing, and part of that conversation, we call it the more innocent time, but it probably wouldn't. It wasn't. It seemed like it was.
It just seemed like it. Exactly. And to feel like we were fooled. But I don't know. And not I don't know about fooled is probably a little strong. But I so enjoyed the old days and just looking for poker anywhere on television and trying to find, you know, oh, who's going to be on the show this week? Oh, I so hope it's going to be our favorite, you know, whatever. Oh, Phil Ivey or one of the Brunsons. And now it's just like, I'm just bummed. And I'm sorry to bring everybody down. We got some good news after this, but that'll probably bum me out eventually, too. But anyway, it's been one of those, it's just been a sad week for me. And then, you know, working on the magazine, and you can't get away from it. You know, that's one of the things they tell you about, you know, hey, you know, do what you love for a living and you'll never work a day in your life. But that's crap, man.
It really is
crap. I mean, it's tough. If something like this happens in the poker world, and then you're faced with poker 24/7 working on the magazine or the show or something, it's tough. It's tough, man. I'd say keep it a hobby. People have been asking me lately, like, hey, you know, when you retire soon, what are you going to do? And I'm like, I'm going to just enjoy working on trees. And like, yeah, but you're getting so good at it. You should, you know, start your own bonsai company. And I'm like, no, I don't want to ruin bonsai for me. I ruined bowling. I ruined sports and I ruined poker. I don't want to ruin this, so I'm never opening any kind of bonsai anything.
Sorry, yeah, it's a grand opening. That's a get my invite.
Yeah, I'll have you there. Balloons and everything. Mr. Miyagi t-shirts.
No, seriously, I know how you feel. I mean, I've been actually, I mean, obviously, I kind of bear some emotions last week. What I didn't really talk about, and I'm not going to talk about it a lot now, but since you brought it up, is just that it is that kind of that gut check, like damn. It's some days it's tough to be in the poker world. And I don't like thinking that because of all the great stuff that I think we've accomplished here, all the great stuff that all the fun times that we've had, just playing cards somewhere. And so you don't want to feel that way. But I'll tell you what's kind of helped me, and same with politics, because, you know, I'm not quite happy with where the country or the world is now, right?
Right.
I just kind of started focusing on the stuff that you can control. So, you know, I can't control whether someone cheats or whether somebody says somebody cheats. I can't control what happens in Washington, but I can control what happens in my community. I can go tonight and play my little $20 Safety Harbor home game right. and enjoy it. And that brings me back to my happy place. So, you can't, particularly the two of us, can't just shut it off, right? Because
right.
how we put food on the table. But to the extent that you can, just focus on the really good, fun stuff, I think, is the way to go. I'm like, you know, I just realized that Papes was again last night. I haven't played that in years. That might be something I need to get back on the calendar and get there, because that was always fun. That always will be fun, right? So.
Yep.
You know, it is I think we're right to get down every once in a while, but I think there's also the way out of it is to just do the things that never let you down.
Speed of that.
Well, we'll start off with a good note.
Yeah, think of back into the muck again after this.
Oh, man. All right. Well, GulfCoastPoker.net, a longtime website that covers the Mississippi and Louisiana Gulf Coast poker scene. I will award the first Gulf Coast Poker Awards on November 11th, and the Andy of PokerCast is among the nominees for Best Content Provider. Way to go, Chris.
See? Yay!
We'll up there. Now, we have no chance of winning, but it's a big...
Yeah, more depression will set in a little while, but...
The nominees, which span categories including Player of the Year, Senior of the Year, and Industry Person of the Year, were culled from suggestions from a panel of players, media, and industry professionals. So... a couple of things I like about this. I mean, obviously, we were nominated, so it's very nice. I appreciate whoever it was that suggested that we do, because I didn't hear about this until I was researching the show. So it certainly wasn't us nominating ourselves. I promise you that. Gulf Coast PokerNet's been around, I promise you, longer than we have. They've been there forever, and very well respected and do a good job. So, I'm glad that they brought up their own awards. You know, there's Minnesota does their own awards. You know, obviously, we've had our criticisms of the Global Poker Awards, and that's a tough thing to pull off. So it's good that there's other ways of recognizing folks out there. So I definitely appreciate the folks at Gulf Coast for doing that. And as I mentioned, I mean, obviously, it's a very regional awards, and the other content providers on there clearly do more for their community than we do. So. If we win, it'll be like the Packers winning because the Lions get flagged for non-fouls. So we'll take it, but, you know.
I'm glad you acknowledge that.
Oh, like, absolutely.
My Facebook feed blew up.
I was like on the couch, and I'm like, ooh, that's bad. That's bad. But as Aaron Rodgers says, it evens out over the year. We got horrible calls last year. So
did you see Aaron Rodgers giving his Spanish interview on ESPN Deportes?
Oh, no, I need to check that out.
Oh, man, he sounds just like you. He knows like three words, but he tried.
Oh, man. Well, I'll tell you the other thing interesting about these awards, too, is that the PokerCast is nominated for Best Content Provider. Now, again, I'm happy to be nominated. I mean, obviously, we talk about Mississippi and Louisiana on this show from time to time, but the magazine does a lot better job of that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, because at least we have Mississippi news and Mississippi coverage and Louisiana news, Louisiana coverage, and if anything somehow happens in Alabama, we'd be all over it. But, yeah, the show, I mean, you know, who knows? I mean, maybe it's because we're on the Gulf Coast. You know, we are a Gulf Coast kind of.
Yeah, I think that's probably
company.
Stretching their Gulf Coast
a
little.
Yeah, I know. Far. I don't know. I don't know what it is.
Technically, yes. But again, the magazine's on the Gulf Coast.
Anyway. Yeah, Florida is. That's what I mean. The magazine's Gulf Coast, and we are in the Gulf Coast, and maybe they think the magazine is an arm of the PokerCast, and not the other way around, because the PokerCast came first.
That's true.
So you never know. But I'll take it. It's a win for us, no matter what. Let's just be nominated is an honor.
Absolutely. It'd be even better if I could quit sneezing today. But hold on. Keep talking.
Oh, man. So anyway, I remember they definitely have been around longer than us, because when we were first starting to branch out from just Florida, I think I had seen their blog and would use it for the news source every once in a while, and was trying to find stuff, content for Mississippi, until we found a writer. So they've been around longer than us, definitely, and they do a really good job up there. So very happy, very honored to nominate whoever nominated us. Thank you very much. And if we were to somehow win, I think tears of joy would actually drown out my tears of sorrow. I think
that's true. But and then the Lions would complain about us winning. All right, in a Sacramento Bee article, Michael Lippman, who is heading up the investigation into the possible live stream cheating at Stone's Gambling Hall, said a major computer forensics company has been hired to review Stone's systems, and he believes it will provide the, quote, definitive evidence needed to reach a conclusion. Lippman said his team also has reviewed all the research done by the poker community. Meanwhile, Mike Postol's attorney, William Portanova, told the Bee that not all the facts are known yet, but his client is innocent, and that winning streaks that Postol experience are possible because losing streaks are also possible, which the poker community jumped all over.
Sure they did.
For. So,
sure.
As they should have. Not probably the best statement to make your first statement coming out. So
yeah.
Not helpful, I don't think, Mr. Portanova. But
yeah, it's only a matter of time, I think, before we're going to get to the bottom of this.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think I was really happy that the Bee had that interview because, you know, obviously this whole past week, you know, we've been talking to folks, both email, private message, Facebook about this, that, you know, predictably, I thought that, again, we were too soft on this. That's what I really wanted to see. I wanted to see how in-depth this investigation is going to be. Now, obviously, people are already questioning whether the computer forensics is the way to go. But, again, it's part of the pie, right? So, obviously, he says that they've looked at all the videos that, you know, the Doug Polks of the world have done and considered all that as well, too. So, again, it's all that stuff together. And hopefully you'll come up with some kind of, as he said, reach a conclusion. So that's what we're all desperately waiting for, is a conclusion, and to know a little bit more about what happened, what didn't happen, and if it happened, how it happened. So it seems to me that we're going to get that fairly soon, but I guess we'll see.
All right, any updates? We've just introduced 11 new vintage Anti-Up logo designs on our merchandise at tpublic.com/stores/anti-up. You know, we don't have to tell you the address. Just go to our website, antiupmagazine.com. And click on our store or whatever, because that's how you can get right to it. Is that correct or no?
You cut out, so I didn't even hear what you said.
Oh, jeez. I every time I read something about our store, I just list the address, and it's so confusing. I figure we just go to our website, right? AntiUpMagazine.com, and somehow link to it?
Yes.
Yeah.
That is correct.
Just seems so much easier to give ourselves some more branding here instead of listing this, you know, horrible address. But check out our T-shirts, our hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and much more with your choice of our awesome new logos. Vintage. And it got some buzz on Facebook and stuff. People were like, holy cow, I'm buying this. This is awesome. So everything is on sale.
For the first time in my life, I was called a hipster, Chris.
Yeah, I saw that. And everything is on sale until Sunday.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, the T-shirts, I think, are like $12 or something. So yeah,
load them up for Christmas and all your gift-giving holidays. Hey, if you'd like to
but definitely give us feedback on it as well, too. So, I mean, you know, we'll have potential of doing a lot more of those if we want. But
They're all good, though. I know I'm not being a salesman. I mean, they're all good. My favorite one is the one that was like a beer can label. But anyway.
To play responsibly.
Yeah, yeah, they're all really cool. So, and the cruise one's cool, too. Okay, so if you'd like to be one of our monthly magazine contributors and represent NAP in your home area, apply to antiupmagazine.com/ambassadors. We have an immediate opening in Michigan. I'm tired of writing it, so somebody do it
please,
for me.
Please. Of course, now, you know, see, that was part of the reason I was so accepting of the Lions' fate this week was because I don't want to upset any of our Michigan people that might actually want to write for us. So be upfront and honest that we won on technicalities this week.
Hey, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. We'll have Hollywood Casino Toledo director of poker, Elliot Schechter, tell you how he would have ruled. This week's prize, a 30-minute telephone lesson and workbook from Thomas Gallagher Casino Seminars, specializing in poker odds and math at poker911.net. See, a little award nomination. I pep right up.
Not bad, not bad. And before you get into this, I just want to say I didn't do this on purpose, but I just realized it. Both our call the floor submitter this week and our hand of the week submitter this week will be on our Antiup cruise next week.
Holy cow!
Pretty cool.
That's awesome. Good, very coincidental.
So, Jonathan, meet Sean. Sean, meet Jonathan, and you know.
All right, this comes from the aforementioned Jonathan Utenbacher. He says, seat one had just won a very large pot in a 1-2 game at a casino, so his chips were scattered all around the table in front of him. The next hand, he was second to act, was dealt his two cards, looked at them, and placed one of his chips on top of them. He had many other chips scattered around his cards as he was busy stacking the chips. Seat nine folded, seat one raised to $10. The dealer glanced at him and then mucked his cards. While the next player was thinking, seat one immediately stopped the dealer and said, "You just mucked my cards." The dealer asked, "Did you cap them?" And he said, "Yes, I did." The rest of us at the table agreed that we saw him put a chip on his cards. Seat one's cards were on the top of the muck, sticking out to the left, and the only two other cards in the muck were the ones folded by seat nine, which appeared to be beneath seat one's two cards. The dealer, for some reason, gave seat 11 the bottom two cards in the muck, which were pretty obviously seat 9's cards. Seat 1 looked at them, said those weren't his cards, and gave them back to the dealer, who then put them on top of the other two cards in the muck, though still fairly separated from the other two cards. The dealer called the four. Oh, gee, finally. The four, sorry, that was me. That was not him, that was me. The four asked what happened and was accurately told the action by the dealer and seat 1. Seat 1 said he could tell the four his two cards, and the four could see if those were in the muck. But the four instead simply had the dealer give seat one the bottom two cards, which seemed to be his. Seat one confirmed they were his. The four allowed him to keep the cards, and the action was back to normal. What muddied the waters was the dealer giving the two muck cards of seat nine to seat one to check if they were his, and then seat one giving them back to the dealer to put back in the muck. It was a bit like playing four-card Monty with the seat one's cards. Also, the dealer had let seat one see seat nine's mucked cards. Seat one had seen two additional cards the rest of the table did not, which I didn't realize until I wrote this, and the four did not show those two cards to the rest of the table. It was a very friendly game, and everyone at the table was arguing for seat one to get his two cards back as he had initially capped them. But what should be the proper ruling?
All right, Chris, before we get to Elliot here, I just want to say you're feeling a little down in the dumps here about being in the poker community. Sometimes it gets to you. I was there this week as well, too. I promise you, Elliot, when he got this email from us to respond, felt the very same way, right?
Yeah.
There's no way you read this and go just – this is like watching Poltergeist in 3 minutes. Like, everything is scary in this, right?
So they're here.
All right, let's see what Elliot, if Elliot can even get through this. So, all right, he says, reading this made me cringe. Yeah, no doubt. I believe that.
Yeah.
Situations such as this where the dealer is deciding a ruling prior to floor being called are becoming a fair share of call the floor submissions. This must mean that this type of thing is becoming more commonplace. I shudder to think. When your cards are mistakenly swiped by the dealer, players must get in the habit of making the dealer stop whatever it is they're doing and immediately calling for the floor instead of demanding that the dealer give back the cards. This is the PSA for the day. Dealers need to stop dealing on autopilot and stop correcting their major errors such as this. When cards are incorrectly taken from a player, the standard will be used in all poker games to return them to the rightful players. The cards must be both identifiable and retrievable. Dealers do not get to decide. They only get to inform the floor. The players must follow the floor's directions. In this case, as there are only one other hand in the muck and every player at the table is in agreement as to which two cards belong to seat one, these cards met both criteria and should have been returned to the player upon instruction of the floor. The cards that were mistakenly shown to seat one should not have been shown to the rest of the table, or should have been shown to the rest of the table at the end of the betting round. Seat one did not enter the pot with this information, and no other player should either. They still should get the information, though. Otherwise, it is quite unfair.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, there is that temptation, like, you don't want to have the boss come over and find out you made a mistake, and so dealers kind of, you know, sometimes will, you know, hey, we all know the rule, let's just fix it, or whatever kind of thing, or, hey, it's only one set of cards that are down there, let's just give him back his cards, and, you know, you get nervous or something, you don't want to get, you know, docked pay or whatever the hell it is they'll do to you if, you know, reprimanded, written up, or whatever. So there's that temptation to just say, hey, you know what, get the game going quicker. This is a table I like. I might get good tips if I get a lot more hands in. I don't want to waste time with the dealer or the floor coming over. And so they're tempted to just like fix the mistake right away, but they really shouldn't. This is something where they just should have called the floor right away, had it taken care of, and pay attention to what's going on. If those cards are capped, hey, they're capped. You know, how do you take those cards from under a chip anyway? You know.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but here's the thing. The floor still came over, right?
Yeah.
You know, so if you are, and you shouldn't, but if you are going to try to fix the situation so the floor doesn't come over, you darn well better fix it correctly.
Yeah.
Because if not, it's going to be even worse when the floor comes over and goes, oh my God, you did this, and then, oh my God, you did this.
I know.
Fix it, right?
Yeah.
So it slows the game even down more, it gets you in more in trouble, so... You know, again, I get it, but I think the best thing to do is just you see the good dealers. The good dealers don't make many mistakes, but when they do make even a simple mistake, they know the first thing to do is call the floor, even if the players are whining not to, that they can figure it out, because, you know, they want that. If nothing else, that reinforces the players that that's the proper thing that should happen. So, you know, it's not a mob mentality out there any more than it is on internet videos over cheating allegations either. So you got to do things properly. So the other thing too, I mean, again, we try to teach on this show, right? So I don't very often win big pots where I have to stack chips. So I don't have a lot of practice with it. But I'll tell you, when I do, I'm always very cognizant of having my cards swiped at that point, because it is very confusing for a dealer there when there is 97 chips all around, and then there's that chip on top of your cards that you don't know whether it's capped or not, right?
Yeah.
So what I've really gotten the practice of in all situations now is keeping my hands on top of my cards as well, too. Again, that doesn't stop the dealer from taking them. I've seen that happen before, too, but it's much less likely when your hand is on top of your chip, which is on top of your cards, that those cards are going to get compromised. So, you know, I think that's one of those things that when you win that pot, I know you're excited that you're stacking chips. That's the best part of poker, right, is stacking chips.
But yeah, yeah.
If you want to be in that hand, I think you've got to slow down your stacking. No one's going to get upset at you if you're in the middle of a hand and you're paying attention to the hand and not stacking your chips. So just kind of chill out on that and really protect your cards. And then none of this would have happened. But all kinds of bad things happened here, though. So
there's got to be some accountability, too, though, to the dealer. I mean, you they tell you to cap your cards. You cap your cards and he still takes them. So now put your hands on your cards. He still takes them.
Absolutely.
I'm going to sit on my cards pretty soon, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No heroes here. Don't get me wrong on that. But again, from my perspective, I always want to do everything in my power to prevent somebody's mistake from happening and affecting me, right? So, but, you know, also, I mean, here's the other thing, too. This was a situation, as Elliot says, where had the floor been called right away, it would have been an easy way to give people the cards back, which everybody at this table agreed should have happened, right?
Right.
But imagine if this player was the seventh person to act and there are a bunch of cards in the muck. At that point, you are SOL, as you've been told before at the World Series.
I have been told that. Yes, I have.
So, you know, you can't, at that point, again, still probably dealer error, but at that point, you're not getting your cards back. So, I mean, this is a situation where the dealer made a mistake, but you got lucky and got your cards back. You can't count on that. So, again, yeah. So, I mean, we can be upset the dealer all we want, and we should be, but ultimately, if you don't want the dealer to mess with you, then there are things you can do to make sure that the dealer doesn't mess with you.
You and I aren't in this part of the industry as much as if at all. But do you wonder? Do you ever think about that? Maybe they have Dale shoppers who play poker for them for casinos and stuff like that. You know what that is, right?
Oh, I think I know what you mean. I mean, like secret chat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. No, well, I'll tell you this. I do know a very common thing in the world is for competitors to quote-unquote shop. That's the word they use, to shop their competitors and go play there and watch how things are done and get an idea of, you know, things your competitors are doing well or things your competitors aren't doing well. So that happens. That's not exactly what you're talking about. But,
yeah, no, I was just curious about somebody like, hey, we're going to – because it would probably behoove a lot of these poker rooms to learn how their dealers are when they don't think the boss is around. And they have a player that, you know, they basically pay this guy to buy in and fold every hand and then just watch the dealers come through and see how they are interacting, how they are with rules, how they are with dealing and stuff like that. And then you never know. And then you just go back and report to the manager or the shift boss or whatever and say, you know, right. Chris is a horrible dealer and Scott's terrible. He whines a lot. So, I mean, that's something that I wonder if they
curious.
Do that.
It's a very interesting question. In fact, actually, I used to be a secret shopper for Shoney's Restaurant. Did you ever have Shoney's?
I did have Shoney's when we first moved here. It was horrible.
Yeah, I know, it was horrible. Yeah, but I got a free meal there every week by going in and you know, timing the waitress and, you know, testing the temperature of the food, all kinds of stuff like that. Wow. So, I mean, hey, when you're right out of college and you're a journalist, you know, you do anything you can to eat for free.
That's
so,
right. Wow.
It's a good question. I mean, maybe if Elliot's listening, he'll let us know. I'm curious whether there might be some gaming regulations against that. I mean, I don't know how you would ever know if somebody's doing that, but, you know, because I know, like, if you've got a shill in the game, they have to be identifiable, right? So that's a different thing because they're playing with house money and everything. So, but I think if you were paying someone to play in your game, even if it's just for research, that would be something I think the player should know, right?
I don't know. I guess.
Being at Shoney's when you're at the table by yourself and you're just there for quality control, right? But
yeah.
If you're at the poker table, now you are essentially affecting the play. Even if you fold every hand, you're affecting the play, right?
Yeah. So, yeah.
I don't know. That's interesting. That's actually very, very interesting. I wonder.
Somebody will tell us that. Yeah, I wonder if it's allowed. Because I think Matt Savage listens to the show once in a while, too, so maybe he'll pick up on it. I don't know. But yeah. Interesting. I'm just curious. Just curious if that happens. And now the whole point of that was to find out that you were a Shoney's secret shopper or whatever.
Secret shopper, yeah. Back in 94.
Our listeners are always asking us for more personal details, so I feel like I need to divulge something now. I used to be a short order cook at a seafood restaurant called Captain C's.
Captain C's.
Yeah, and then when they first
spelled C-E-A-S.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, when they first opened it, it was C-apostrophe-S, and then like a million people went to them and said, seriously? Seriously, C-apostrophe-S? The whole play on words, it should be S-E-A-S, so they changed the name of the company like 8 years in, and then it was Captain C's, S-E-A-S, which I thought was interesting. But I mean,
that was my first secret shop report for that, was change the freaking name, idiots. And by the way, that short order cook sucks.
I was horrible. But I got better toward the end, and then I just quit. But I used to have to make the coleslaw fresh, the onion rings fresh, the, you name it, squid. I had, you know, the calamari. I used to take the little calamari bodies out and cut them up. And, man, that was not fun. Not fun.
Yeah, got to say, it's not a job that I am ever upset that I didn't have. So.
And that was a whole different type of depression that I used to have. Unlike this kind that I have now from poker, but hey, you know what? We have a new O'Malley's move. Here it comes.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are seated in our regular $1, $2 No Limit Hold'em home game. This is only the third hand of the night, and we've already doubled our stack on the first hand to $400 when our turned set of kings took down our opponent's slow-played, flopped set of tens. He has since rebought, and we're eight-handed. The blinds post, under the gun folds, and the plus one makes the standard raise to $8. This is the player that we just doubled through, and based on what we know about him, he can get a bit spewy after losing a big pot. However, he rarely stone-cold bluffs, even when he's tilting. It's folded to us in the hijack with the jack of spades, ten of spades. This is too strong a hand to let go here. Plus, we're bound to get some chips off the plus one if we hit something. We call. The button is the only other player that calls. With $27 in the pot, the flop is the Jack of Hearts, 10 of Clubs, 4 of Hearts. The plus one wastes little time in betting $20 into the pot. I like this hand. I'm not that concerned about the hearts, and if he has something like aces, kings, or queens, we can probably get his entire stack here. We raise it to $50, going for value. The button folds, but the plus one calls. The pot is $127, and the turn is the king of hearts. The plus one very quickly shoves for his remaining $142. So, it's to us. What's the move?
All right, it's time for the AdvancedPokerTrading.com Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@AndyUpMagazine.com. If you haven't won something from us in the past year, you'll get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. And as I mentioned, Sean Hamster in the house today. He's going to be on the cruise, in a little bit more than a week now. Wow.
Yeah,
coming up.
Coming up.
All right, so he says, I'm in my monthly home game that I host with a bunch of regulars. We started out 10-handed and played it. I played it. It's also a dinner party. Played for a few hours, down to 6-handed. I have a lot of time with these guys and know their tendencies pretty well. Most buy in for $20 to $40. I bought in for $40. I have a pretty aggressive image at this game. He says, Villain 1 is one of the better players of the game, former charity room dealer. He plays fairly tight, but will make moves when it makes sense. He's the type of player that will think through the action and make sure stories add up. Villain 2 is another decent player, plays and focuses on his hands more than what opponents have, and he's still a little bit off on the odds and hand strengths at times I've noticed. It's a quarter-quarter cash game. And again, he says, players bought in for 20 to 40, but a few have reloaded a couple of times. Stack sizes, our hero is 125, villain number one is 95, and villain number two, 60. So our hero has everybody covered that's active with this hand. Down to the last few hands of the night, and, two middle position player calls. Villain two in the cutoff raises to 75. The button folds, and we are in the small blind with the King of Hearts, 10 of Clubs. And he did mention that the 75-cent raise was standard for the table.
Yeah, I mean, I to be honest, I'm folding this hand. I don't see how you move forward with this hand. I don't care if it's, you know, 1 cent, 2 cent on stars. It's a horrible hand. It's not a good hand. You're out of position the entire hand, no matter what happens.
Right, yeah.
It's not even suited, which, you know, obviously only improves the hand like 2 or 3%, but it doesn't matter. I mean, that, you know, if you knew you could make a king high flush, you know, it might be a little more valuable to you. But right now, it's just, I just fold. Just get out. I'm in a small blind, which I know is 25 cents, the same as a big blind, but I'm going to be, the rest of the hand, no matter what happens, I'm going to be out of position, and I have a horrible hand. So I'm just letting it go. It's simple as that.
Yeah, sorry, Sean. This was an easy fold for me as well, too. But I'm assuming you're not going to fold, or this would be hand of the week. So, yeah, there's just no reason to play this in this position. You know, if it's on the button and you're the first in, completely different hand now, right? But small blind facing a raise, this shrinks up real quick, I think. So,
I mean, I know it's a shorthanded table, too, so that might increase its value, but it really...
Definitely does.
You got somebody raising, and I realize it's someone who's... you know, in the cutoff, so it could be any, you know, it's a shorthanded game, it could be any two cards in his hand, but it's still a hand that I'm just like, you know what, let's just move on.
All right, our hero says this is a good hand, five-handed, so, you know, he does, as you mentioned, it is better shorthanded than it is in a table, but still not good enough for me, but we'll see what happens. He says, villain number two will open a position with quite a few hands, especially speculative ones, pairs, or high cards. I'm often the one opening, but since the villain did it for me, I elect to call. Sometimes I would raise here, but I've had a few large hands heads up with this villain recently and elect to come along out of position. All right, I'm going to pause here before we get the rest in this hand and just say, again, when we get hands of the week from people in home games where they play with these folks like every week and know them really well, right? Mm-hmm. The play is different at that point because now you are playing with the players. I mean, but when we're analyzing for the listeners, we're analyzing them as hands that you can take with you, right? So,
right.
So not discounting the intimate knowledge you have of your fellow players when we say that King 10 in small blind is not a playable hand. So, I mean, entirely be playable if you know your opponent. So, all right, so we call, and the big blind, he says, is a pretty tight pre-flop. He thinks for just a moment and flips in the call. The bet may not seem big, but he would commonly fold to this sizing throughout the night. The two limpers also fold, so we're three-handed to the flop. That is the 10 of hearts, 6 of spades, 8 of hearts, and we are first to act.
Well, this is interesting. I mean, we do have top pair and second best kicker. The problem is that just because it's 5 or 6 handed doesn't mean that the cutoff doesn't have jacks or better. You know, I mean, what would you do if you had jacks or better there? You wouldn't just call, you'd raise. So while you can give us a description of how he normally plays or what he normally does or whatever, you know, I don't ever get too excited about top pair when top pair is a middle pair. And I'm facing a raise in the hand preflop. So it's great. I don't see any reason to bet out, though. I feel like let them continue to bet and get an idea of what this guy is willing to put in the middle here. If you just bet out now and he folds, you've got no value for your tens. And so you might as well maybe let him string him along a little bit, see if you or try to find out if he does have something better than your tens. So I'm probably not betting here. Let's see, you said it was 10 of hearts, 6 of spades, 8 of hearts, and we had king. So, I mean, we could possibly make that flush, too, that we were talking about, the king of hearts, but still, I don't think I'm going to bet. If I bet, then they may just go away, and now I've got nothing for my pair. But if I bet and I get some sort of resistance or call, I'm going to be careful on the turn, and then maybe shut it down if it feels like they just have something better than we do, or if they re-raise our, you know, our bet, they raise our bet. So I generally wouldn't bet out here now because, again, I'm out of position even then, you know. So I think I would just check here and let him bet, and then from there I would decide. Like if someone else gets out of line because we have one other player in his hand, I believe. So yeah. If that person gets out of hand and the other guy gets out, they'll have to go crazy. All of a sudden it's like, holy cow, I think my 10's just shriveled up. And I can get out of this, but let's just check and see some betting comes along, because usually people, when they raise preflop or whatever, they usually will bet. And if it's some sort of a flop like this, sometimes people will try to steal the pot. So let's check.
Yeah, I think this is a walk the dog situation, the check. I mean, you look at it, I mean, one, we got into a pot that we shouldn't have to begin with, as we mentioned, right? Now we hit top pair, so now we're somewhat committed. I don't want to say committed to his hand, but now they're... The poker gods are reeling us more into the danger zone here, right?
Yeah.
So I don't want to be too aggressive here. I think at this point I just want to kind of limp to the end and hope that my bad preflop decision ends up being a good post-river decision, right? So it does change things if I don't have the king of hearts here, because now I'm a little worried about the heart getting there. But the king of, I mean, if a heart comes on the turn, that's actually not a bad card for me, for us now, I don't think, right?
Right.
So, because now we're not going to be easily pushed off this hand because we have that one more shot to hit the flush, and other people might be scared. So, again, I think you're right. I'm going to check call here. I'm assuming there's going to be a bet here. I'd be shocked if it gets checked all the way around. And if it does, then, you know, hey, then I wake up on the turn and I'm quite happy at that point. But right now, I assume there's going to be a bet. And I'm going to call it. So, all right. Our hero says, top pair, good kicker, backdoor flush. I plan to bet here pretty strong and happily take the pot. There is certainly a chance of a flush draw opportunities that I want to make pay. Also, if anyone's holding an ace or a small pair, I want them to pay to float. So we bet 225.
Well, I don't know. I mean, that I can see him trying to protect because it is kind of a wet board. You know, the blind who, you know, sort of hemmed and hawed a little before calling. I mean, that person could easily have two pair here or 7-9, you know, suited, something like that. So you have to be wary of that. So I guess you could bet to see where you are, as Scott used to say, and drive Lee crazy. But I don't know. I mean, I guess there's an argument for betting, and the argument, you know, Sean made here. But I feel more comfortable checking and seeing what's going on. And plus, if you bet now, which we're going to find out, obviously, that they didn't all fold because it's hand of the week. But if you bet now and they fold, then it's like, oh, I just threw away top pair and I got nothing for it, basically, except for a little chintzy raise. So,
well, I would argue that you got more out of that hand than you had the right to. So, I mean,
yeah, I guess so.
One sense, I'm not upset when betting and taking it down here because this is a hand that really has the potential of going south later on, costing us a lot of money, right? So, yeah. At this point, I'm like, you know, hey, all right, if I can pick up whatever it is, $2 or whatever it was, with a hand that I shouldn't have been in, I'm not going to cry that I didn't get max value out of it. I got pretty good value out of it. So there is that argument, I guess. But I think by betting, I mean, now he did bet a lot. I mean, it's almost a pot-sized bet, right? So, depending on is it the hijack? Is it hijack or button? Hijack, yep. How much he respects a bet that size. But I got to assume that that player is going to raise, because unless he was playing with a bunch of garbage, and garbage like 7-9 would be fantastic right now. But unless he's playing with garbage, you know, I think I would expect that hand to get raised, right? I would expect this player to have something better than tens right now. So if he check, if he raises, not check, right, raises us now, that's what I'd fully expect. And I don't know if I want to go to war with
just tens.
Darren tens, the second kicker, right? So, but all right, we'll see what happens. all right, the big blind calls. He says, this is interesting to me. The best size would almost always get him to fold any marginal hand. Though I'm a super aggressive in this game and he knows I can bluff. He didn't seem that interested in me, though, but was stoically in thought for a bit before making the call. The other opponent also calls. He too thought for a while before making a crying call. This I'm not surprised by. He likes to chase, even gutters, thinking there's a good chance he may hit it. Judging by the way he called, I feel strongly that he is on a draw. But if he is, what is the big blind playing? All right. Three-handed to the turn, which is the jack of clubs. So our board now is 10 of hearts, 6 of spades, 8 of hearts, jack of clubs. And we are first act again.
Okay, so this sucks. I mean, it's an over card now. So anybody who just, like Scott, who likes to just call with his two overs, open at the turn, has now done it. So that blows. Two calls blow. It'd be great if we had this mortal nuts and we got two calls, but we didn't. So I'm a little concerned with villain one, to be honest with you. This is the one that was in the blind, and he's thinking about, you know what I mean? He's thinking about the call, and then...
Yeah, so here's, I think, the mistake we make. Again, I don't know what he has now, but we make the mistake, I think, of sometimes saying that someone thinks a lot before making the call, as if they were deciding between folding and calling, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But often when it's this case, it's not that they're thinking about folding. It's they're thinking about whether they should raise or not, right?
Yep.
So, didn't mean to interrupt, but yeah, go ahead. Yeah,
you're right. I was just about,
far more scared about now.
That's pretty much exactly what I was going to say. I'm saying to myself, hey, this guy, and then did you use the word stoically before?
Yeah, I said stoically, very nice. Yeah.
So, stoically, so I'm thinking, okay, so this guy's trying to figure out how he can get more money out of us, or if he should just walk the dog on us. So, this guy's hit like two pair, or even the straight is possible here, and he just wants everyone to stay in the hand. And so if this guy just calls a bet that we – if we bet here and he calls again, I'm done. But I don't know if I'm going to bet again. I don't know if I'm going to bet again. I just – now I don't even have top pair, shriveled up, don't have top pair, top kicker, and, you know, other straights got there as well. Not that I'd say queen nine would stick around, but yeah, other straights got there, you know.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's really the only thing. That's the only thing that got there that I'm really that even makes sense. I mean, at this point, I'm not –
well, 7-9 in the blind suited. Is,
well, 7-9 in the blind already had his beat, though. So
no, I know. I'm just saying.
This card doesn't change anything other than
top pair.
Right? So, yeah. Or if somebody was like on ace-jack or something like that. So
I mean, think about that. Ace-jack of hearts right now is ecstatic. They stuck around.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, again, I wouldn't have bet out on the flop, but the fact that we have to play it the way it's been handed to us now, right? So
right.
The fact that we did bet out now... this jack is not as worrisome to me because of how we bet. So I think in terms of deciding my action, I don't think I can check now and give up on this hand. So I think I've got to the jack very unlikely help somebody. So either I'm already crushed by that 7-9 or a set or something like that, or I'm still ahead at this point. So I think, you know, we made the decision to bet the flop. We have this aggressive persona, so I think we got to keep it up. And the danger that aggressive persona is, if that big blind is sitting there with that 7-9, he knows he's going to get a lot more out of us because we're going to keep betting. But I think we still have to bet here the way we played it. But again, I would play the hand completely different. So.
I think I'm checking. I don't think I'm betting like you're saying. Because if I'm going to bet, there's what? I'm $10 in the pot now? And yeah. To make a two-thirds bet, you know, is like $6 or $7 on a top, not even top pair now, with two callers behind me. And I'm out of position. Just like I said, I'm not comfortable putting in $6 or $7 here. I'm just not. I don't think I can do it. I think I'm going to check.
All right. I'm going to guess that our hero is not going to, but let's see. He says, both players look at me fairly quickly, expecting a bet. not sure if that means they're waiting for that annoying second bullet or licking their chops. A jack is certainly the original in the original ranges of both players. Jack X suited, ace jack, queen jack, and more combos. I decided to test the waters and still put a little pressure on drawing hands, which I'm still confident one of them has. So I bet $6.
Okay.
They repeat the action of the flop, though each takes a little bit more time to think this time. They both call.
Okay, so we know at some point here we're not ahead. Somebody here, there's no way there's two drawings. Okay, so one's drawing for a straight and one's drawing for a flush. I doubt it. Somebody has something.
But
somebody has something.
What would you be drawing to either? I mean, there's no...
The hearts.
No, that's a flush, not a straight.
Oh, straight. Straight, I'm sorry. So, yeah, no, yeah.
So, yeah, you're right. This would require two people with hearts, and we have the king of hearts in our hands, so that would require somebody to be drawing with the third nuts to flush,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, you're right. I'm like, I've got all the information I need. It really sucks now that I put $9 in this pot that I probably have zero chance of winning. But that's where we are now. So,
yeah.
Again, and if that's right, I mean, we'll have obviously go replay the hand at the end like we always do. But I would wonder if I could have got to the river here with a lot less than that. So, because right now, I mean, well, they called, so we are going to see the river. But... there's no card that's going to come that's going to make me happy, I don't think, right?
No, there's no way. Even if it's another 10 or whatever, your trips are, you're probably going to be beat already. You know, it just feels like someone in the blinds, the only way I think you can maybe win is someone in the blinds has two pair and the other one's drawing, and then you hit a 10 on the end, or a king for a better two pair. Other than that...
Yeah. You're like 6-8 for one.
Yeah. And or a jack, you know, yeah. Jack, then you make jacks and tens to beat their 6s and 8s or something, but...
Okay, so there's possibilities.
There's possibilities, but it's very... We're grasping at straws here to try to win a pot.
All right, our hero says, I'm not so sure about things now. Certainly, villain 2 would still go for his draw. What is villain 1 still sticking around with, though? I could see him doing it with a strong flush draw like ace-x of hearts, but would they both really have a flush draw? Wow, look at that.
Yeah.
Window into our minds, right? Two pair can make sense with jack 10, jack 8, jack 6. I could also see 6, 6, and 8, 8, but I feel like I'd see a raise, certainly from the big blind at least, to prevent the flush from getting there. Queen 9 comes to mind briefly, but again, I feel like I would have gotten raised to prevent the flush, and I didn't pick up any tells that either my opponents felt particularly strong. Granted, the big blind is very hard to read.
I want to say something here, and I'm just as guilty as Sean is of doing this when I analyze hands, even when I play. But we protect against the flush way too often. Can you count how many times on your hand that you played a hand and then let something get there on the river where you go? I mean, it doesn't happen that often that the flushes get there and you've cost yourself the pot. It happens, but you can't always think that if the heart comes on the river, you've lost this hand, you know, or that you have to keep protecting against that heart. I mean, I know we do it when it seems obvious to us, or if we know that's the type of player it is, but you know, it's something that I think was a big leak in my game was I would always overbet. And then when to stop the flush from getting there, and then that's when I would get caught with somebody flopping a set, and I didn't realize it, and I'm screwed. And it's just, it's something to think about. It's something to work on. It doesn't, you don't always have to assume that the flush is going to get there just because people are calling. This guy could be calling with the mage straight already, and he's just walking you along. And the more you're putting in, the happier he is. So I do the same thing. I especially when I'm analyzing the hands, I'm always, because when it's a hand of the week too, I'm already in defensive mode because you know they usually lost and they want to know how to play it better. They don't usually win and want to know how they play it better. You won. So I'm always trying to protect against these monsters under the bed. But in this case, I think that, you know, I think we need to really think that we're behind, and it doesn't matter that we're trying to stop someone from making a hand. I think someone's already made a hand, and we need to check. We can't bet now. We just cannot bet.
I agree with everything you say, but the one thing that I'm sticking on is if, again, it certainly seems likely that the big blind is sitting on a straight here, but isn't he playing with fire here by not being more active in this hand?
I just think that he is willing to take that chance.
Here has to be on a flush draw. I mean, obviously we know our hand, so we know we're not. But you know, when it goes call bet call call bet call call with two hearts on the board, the chances of that flush draw being out there keep going up with each action, I think. So,
well, here's,
if I, there was 7-9, you know. Nerves of steel, that's great if you have them and you can make it to the end, but you know, if that heart gets there and somebody turns out to have the hearts and I was sitting on that 7-9 from the beginning, I'd be kind of sick. So that,
well,
I didn't
do more. Here's my comment on that. One, let's say the hero had checked and it gets to our guy that who we think already has the straight, maybe. He bets the same amount our hero just did. He bets 6. And before he bets 2.25 or whatever. And that's probably what he bets if he's made the straight anyway. So he's got somebody betting it. The first time he delayed, he thought, well, I got the straight. Is this guy betting a flush draw or is he betting because he's hit top pair? And then he thought about it and he said, I'm just going to call because I think this might get the villain 2 out anyway. And when it didn't, then when he got to the turn, he's like, all right, well, if this guy checks, I'm going to end up betting about 6. Then the guy bets. So now he automatically has to bet 18 and then lose the hero there and then lose the other guy and then lose the pot. So he's trying to make the most money possible. So he's thinking, okay, I'm going to call 6 and the guy behind me is going to finally fold. Then when the guy doesn't fold, now he's like, okay, well, on the river I'll be cautious because if the river and a heart comes and somebody wakes up, then I'll know I'm beat. But I feel like this guy is like letting us bet for him what he would have bet anyway, and he keeps thinking villain 2 is going to fold. And when villain 2 doesn't fold, then he's like, geez, you know, what the hell?
Or the other argument that I thought about now is that if you are in that straight, you actually don't want villain 2 to fold, the one that you assume is on the flush draw because we've been betting this, right?
Right.
And we've been calling, that person's been calling, because they're making bad decisions on the amount of money for drawing. So, I mean, that's the other reason that you bet. It's not, quote unquote, to protect against the flush. It's to build value when somebody's still drawing, which, you know, obviously you do more in Omaha than you do in Hold'em. But so, I mean, it's so weird where we are in this hand because we haven't even finished it to go back and redo it, and we're already redoing it. But, you know, but I'm thinking now that if the big blind does have that straight already, he's not worried about us outdrawing him because we're betting this right now. He's worried about the player behind him outdrawing him, but at this point, these bets are so big now to the pot size that I think you want to leave that guy in. Let him keep pumping money in. I mean, obviously, you got to hope the heart doesn't get there, but you're getting more value out of this hand by letting him stay in. So that's probably why, you know, if he's thinking about it, that's probably why he's not raising. But I think we could be wrong. He may not be on anything. So,
and I'm not entirely certain that villain 2, if he's drawing, is making a mistake by calling, because there's a lot of money in that. He's getting 3-1 easily on his money, maybe a little more.
If it is, then that's fine. But
to make a flush. So, I mean, if there's 6 out there, then you call the 12. Now he's got – you call the 6. That's 12 plus the 9 from the bet before the turn. So now that's 21. You get 6 to win 21. That's more than 3-1 on your money to make a flush. Now, the implied odds aren't going to get – you're not going to get anything on that, because once that flush presents itself, everyone's going to check to you and probably fold.
Right, yeah.
But – I still think he's getting decent odds, especially if he already has a pair too. You know, if he has like ace 6 and he's got the 6, you know, ace 6 of hearts, he's got a pair of 6s with an ace, and then he gets there, or jack 10. And, you know, so Well, anyway, there are reasons to call, but I think that this guy is saying, hey, the middle guy is saying, hey, I've got a straight, you know, I'm gonna ride it out here and hope the board doesn't pair and doesn't flush up, and then I'll be like, you know, and then I can come alive, see if this hero decides to try to bet into me again, you know, on the river, you know. And so I don't know. I don't know. I think you can say playing with fire, but I think how many times will a flush draw, does a flush draw actually get there? And then on top of it, how many times does it beat you? You know, I think you can safely try to dodge that every once in a while. You don't always have to just keep shoving your stack in the middle when there's a possibility of something coming. So sure. Anyway, it's a very interesting hand. It really is.
All right, and it's not over yet. So, all right, so the river is the king of clubs. So our final board is 10 of hearts, 6 of spades, 8 of hearts, jack of clubs, king of clubs. So now we have top and second pair, and we are first deck.
Well, okay, so this is brutal. It's good if the guy has 6-8 or jack 8 or jack 10. It's brutal if he has the straight. At this point, we know the draws didn't get there. I might be willing to check, believe it or not, because a lot of other hands still got there. Ace, queen of hearts got there, you know? So,
yeah, I think we got showdown value here, right? So we check call here. I mean, but why play with fire if we have an inkling that we are already behind and this card just sucked us into the river, right?
Yeah. If we check, and then if the guy we think has a straight bets, you know, he's going to make like a $10, $12 bet or something. It's probably worth the call. And then the other thing is that it could be where he doesn't have what we think he has. He's scared. He checks behind, and it gets the guy who misses
and
he bluffs at it. And you think there's no way this guy, because if this guy had the straight already, he would have bet more because he had two bets coming into him. So if that guy bluffs at it, now you got a chance to call, and you know the second guy didn't have it because he would have bet that. I think a check is very valuable here.
Yeah, I think that's the scenario I'm hoping for, is that checks and then the hijack bets, because at that point I feel pretty good. So at that point now, if that happens, then I got to think about raising, and maybe I don't, but at least I have to think about it at that point because of what we just said. So
yeah.
All right, our hero says, all right, I've showed a lot of aggression, represent a strong hand. Now I finally have one. Looking at a board, this is clearly coordinated for straights, but I found it unlikely that either player would stick around with ace, queen, queen, nine, though they could with hearts. So let's find out. I'm looking for value and only a little scared. I bet $12.
Do not like that.
Yeah, like you said, if we're already beat, now we're throwing money away. Potentially, what happens if we get raised now, right?
I mean, yeah.
Can't call a raise here, right? There's no way we're good if we get raised. So I think that's $12 that we just lit on fire, to be honest. But
yeah,
that's what's going on. All right, the big blind considers for a while, checks his cards, thinks for a while, checks his cards again like he's almost going to fold, thinks again, counts out 12, sets them aside, one more delay before counting another 12 and sliding them in silently for a raise to $24. The other player insta-folds, and it's back to us.
Guess what I'm doing? I'm folding.
Tap at the table, and I'm like, oh, boy.
Yeah, and you know,
I'm excited with my winnings today, and I'm happy to give them back to you so you come back next week.
Here's why he double-checked his cards, because he makes sure he has a straight, and now he's thinking through, is there any possible way that you have a bigger straight than him? And he's saying there's no way, and he knows the guy behind him. There's no way the guy behind him's calling because he was clearly drawing. So no matter what he does, that guy, if you call 12, I hope the guy, he's not going to get an extra 12 out of him. So he min-raised you, hoping to get you to just get that extra 12 out of you because he knows you don't have ace-queen. And he probably flopped it. Either that or it's a set. He flopped a set. One or the other. He's got pocket sixes. He was contemplating raising pre-flop, and then he didn't, and he flopped sixes or eights. Or he flopped it with 7-9, maybe even 7-9 suited. And but I think this guy's got you beat. And I mean, he made it such a tantalizing bet, but I just can't imagine. I mean, maybe I don't fold for 12 just because there's so much out there. I mean, that's 36 on top of the 30 that was already in the pot. So almost a $100 pot here for 12 bucks.
Yeah, I think you wasted a lot of money with that argument, though. That you know, there's a lot of intelligence behind it normally, but in this particular hand, I honestly, I'm looking at this board, I don't know what we could beat now. I'm not seeing anything we can beat.
Yeah.
And yeah. I mean, guy's very excited about his 10-6 or 6-8 or something like that, great, but I just don't see it. I think that guy's played it so passively the entire time that, you know, the only thing he can think of if he's got a weaker hand like that is that we've been betting all along with something like ace king strong, and now we think we've got the nuts with top.
Yeah.
But otherwise than that, there's just nothing on this board that makes me feel that we're ahead, even though we improved on the rivers. So I don't know. There's a lot of scenarios where I think you got to put that money in just in case you're wrong. But wow, the chances of being wrong here are very slim. So
yeah, let's fold.
I got to fold.
Yeah, let's fold.
All right. Our hero says, well, I was thinking I wouldn't be able to send this hand in since I wouldn't have had any big decision. Wrong. Okay, I found other hands that could make sense. Ace, queen of hearts, queen, nine of hearts. Both strong flush hands that backed into straights. But I'm so confident the big blind has a flush draw that at least some credibility of these hands are lost. I also feel... but I'm so confident that the hijack had a flush draw that at least some credibility of these hands are lost. I also feel the big blind may raise pre-flop with ace queen suited but not queen nine. At this point I had immediately settled that it was a call or fold. I wasn't re-raising this one. The min bet was suspicious, but it's hard to read into, and with our stacks it's still a big bet. In the past we've played at each other with weird overbets and min bets. We like to make each other think. I ask why he min bets. I ask if he really stayed in with ace queen or queen nine. I ask if he has a busted straight. No reactions. So I get down to three main reasons for calling. I think there's a chance he's bluffing his busted flush or thinks I'm weak due to my aggressive image. The main negative of this idea is the min bet. Why wouldn't he push harder? Two, it's $12 for a $65 pot. Is he bluffing often enough for these odds? Problem is he knows the odds too. Why so cheap if he's bluffing? And three, I have to see his hand for the hand of the week. So I call. His villain two, but it's actually villain one, says, I made it on the flop and turns over 9-7 offsuit, flopping the straight.
Yeah.
Wow, I totally missed that. Sure, I considered small straight cards on the flop, but I was certain he wouldn't call pre-flop with that, with how tight he plays. Clearly, I need to adjust my perception of him shorthanded, but also didn't think to consider it as one of the last hands of the night. The other opponent confirms that he was very close to folding preflop, but figured it was the last hand. Oh, I'm sorry, the same player, the big blind.
Well, that's the thing, too, is when you think about it, one, you're in the blind, he's in the blind. It's not that big of a raise. There were other limpers in there already, and then you called. So now the guy only has to call 50 cents, and that's one of the things I wanted to know, too, was this player stuck for the night? Now he's thinking, for 50 cents with only a couple of hands left, I want to play every hand I can. Yeah, and he says, I'm going to play 7-9 for 50 cents when there's, you know, $2 or $3 in the pot already, whatever it was. And then, boom, flops it and then walks the dog the whole way. I wanted to say something earlier. I had said it was $36 and then 30 is like 60. I was like close to 100, I said. I don't know how I got close to 100. It was like 60-something. But even then, I'm still folding for that 12. I think I know I'm beat. That min raise tells me everything. What could I possibly beat? You know, it's better to just save 12 bucks than to lose it and just to find out. I mean, that's information that's not going to help you in the future, because this was all desperation at the end of the night, maybe, you know, or in the small blind or big blind. That, to me, you're not going to get anything out of that. So I'm glad I would have folded.
Yep.
All right.
Well, all right, Scott, so I'll play better on the cruise ship.
Yes, so we'll and Scott's got a Spanish lesson right around the corner, so I got to let him go. But it was a good show, and I want to thank Sean for bringing my spirits, lifting my spirits up, even though he lost the hand. I know he's going on the cruise. Makes me happy. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
When you need need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.